Today we will discuss the second part of the Mahanidana Sutta, dependent co-arising. But the second part you won't understand unless you remember the first part. So the if we just briefly think about the first part, first Buddha was describing this dependent co-arising, Paticchasamuppada. So starting from the name and form, and the consciousness come to arise, and then from the consciousness, the name and form, and then contact, and then feeling. Depending on the contact, there is feeling. That depending on feeling, there is craving, and then clinging, and then the existence, and then existence as the condition, there is this birth. So the dependent arising. And then Buddha went on detail the aging and death, and the birth, becoming, clinging, craving, and then depending on the feeling, how this craving come to arise. And when we have craving, then there is this seeking. We discuss in greater detail. If I eat something and I have craving for that, then I want that one to next time as well. So there is this seeking. I will go and buy it, and you know, and then yes, this because of the seeking, there is this acquisition. Because of the acquisition, then there is this decision making. And having done that decision making, and there is this desire and passion, Chandraga. Because of the desire and passion, then there is this attachment. And since there is attachment, there is this possessiveness. I have the appropriation of whatever that object that I have seen. So there is this stinginess that it's for me. So there were five kind of stinginess. That is stinginess concerning the dwellings, family, gain, reputation, and doctrine, Dhamma. And because of that stinginess, or the machirya, that defensiveness, that we defend our properties, house, and the family. So even the religion, for example, the Dhamma. So people go and kill each other because of this. And because of the defensiveness, there is this unskilled phenomena, that is that one would go take these weapons and kill and steal, you know, all those bad things will happen because of this. So it's important to understand that it is with the feeling that we have this attachment, possessiveness, and our mind roll in that direction, and it take hold of whatever thing. The starting point was the feeling. Because of the contact, there was this feeling. So since I have the attachment and all those things, then it goes further down in this the barb of lust we look as well, and go back to the same feeling. So it's revolving around it. So that this is the birth cycle. Went into explaining what is the contact, and basically Buddha said that for the name and form, the requisite condition, as the name and form requisite condition, comes contact. So over there Buddha said that if I know about something, let's say I have tasted something before, and having tasted that thing, and I remember the feeling and the perception and so on, and the next time when I see such a thing, then I designate that this is the food that you ate, this is the feeling, and this is the perception, and so on. So it keeps coming up. And if I do not have it, put the other way around, if I do not have it, then I would not designate anything. That I don't mumble about this, you know, that particular food. And you can see that, as we discussed last week as well, that if you, even in the morning tea, for example, in your office, And there may be certain food, but there are things that you don't eat, you do not know sometimes, and you don't care about it, you don't look at it. You just go and pick up what you know. So, because that there are certain things, you know, the remembered, the feelings and the perceptions, and because of that we put a label. So, having seen this sort of a thing, a chair before, and then when I see something like that, I will say it's a chair, so I designate it. If I do not know, then there's nothing happening with it. And the extreme end of that one, Buddha explained in Malunke Putta Sutta, in Connected Discourses of the Buddha. Buddha said that Buddha was asking from Malunke Putta, if you haven't seen something, and if you have never seen it, and if you do not see, and you do not think that you would see it, then whether the lust and desire and lust arise about that one, and Malunke Putta said that no, but so that means there may be something in the world that I have in another country which I do not know, and there is a tree in that country I do not know about it, and there is no desire and lust regarding that one because I do not know. So that means there must have been former, volitional formations regarding that thing for us to play a part in that thing, labeling and going in that direction. And so Buddha said that if all are absent, nothing will come to arise.
I think that that particular statement is a fundamental thing to understand the past birth as well as future birth. Is it that the way we can describe that?
Yeah, past. You don't need to go to the past and the birth.
Yeah,
you can say you are immediately fasting, and at this moment or the next moment. Yeah. So if you actually generalize it, so it goes back past and the future birth. So that's very important thing to understand. And the next one, Buddha talk about the consciousness. So the from consciousness as a requisite condition comes name and form. So over here you need to, sort of the statement here is, if consciousness were not to descend into mother's womb, would name and form take shape in the womb? If the consciousness is not settling over there, then the name and form does not take shape in the womb. No, nothing is arising. So the importance here is that the consciousness should, you know, establish. And the next statement Buddha is asking, if we cut off the consciousness of a young boy or girl, were to cut off, would name and form ripen, grow? It's gone. Now from this body, if the consciousness is not there in this body, so this is the end of that thing. So you can see the maintenance of the body or anything else, the consciousness should remain. So consciousness get hold of to whatever the thing that we see, hear, and or contemplate, and then the whole cycle revolve around it. So vijnana sthiti, consciousness should be there to have that one. So otherwise,
so that means, is it the latest one is the one that that is going to give the birth, isn't it? Because the consciousness, there's so many. It's not only one. I mean,
no. One ceases, the other come to arise. So always there is only one consciousness, the conscious movement. It's not some sort of a thing that exists. It's from the name and form, the consciousness. From the consciousness, name and form, it revolves.
Yeah, but there's so many, because the other things come, the karma come into scene too after
karma
that.
Karma is inside the name and form. So the name and form has got the contact, feeling, perception, volition. So volition is the karma. So the volition is the one that coordinate those factors. You know, my attention, my feeling, my perception, all coordinated by that one.
But that consciousness, the last one, that has a volition too.
Yes, and that creates another name and form.
Yeah, but the previous ones are also some sort of consciousness, isn't it? That volitional formations, that all the volitional formations, that comes to like karma at the end.
It's a stream. This consciousness flows like a stream. Each moment, we cannot say that we do not have the consciousness, we have the consciousness. Mm. The one consciousness ceases, the other one comes to arise. So what factors this one is that the name and form actually do this direction. For example, we are talking over here, if someone opened that door over there, so that, you know, that our ear consciousness become active on that sign, and then we turn our head. So all those things, the body consciousness, everything come to arise. So you can see it's a stream that looks like a continuous stream. But it is, in the sense, it is actually one ceases, the other one come to arise, but there is a very rapid. So each moment you have that the karmic effect.
Mm.
Every consciousness has got that.
Yeah,
every consciousness, no consciousness come to arise without the volition in it. Mm. Volition is there. So.
But the birth occurs because of that moment at the day, what the consciousness is, isn't it?
Yeah, at that time there is consciousness and there is this volitional formation, then it construct the consciousness on the other one. So that, let's say I used to eat hoppers, then I want to have a hopper birth, right? The birth that I can consume hoppers and sort of thing. So something to do with this earth, something like that. So the, my volition coordinates this sort of thing.
This birth is only, it's due to one consciousness or many?
Well, there is this, at the time of death, there is a consciousness.
Yes, one consciousness.
It's one.
That is the leading factor for the next birth.
Yes.
But after, what is called in Sinhala, Dasagatthama, this Mahapuse, then all the other karma and what is called, that come and play their part.
Yeah, that's the one with the same over here. If consciousness were not to descend into the mother's womb, would name and form take shape in the womb? Right? So, when the consciousness is established over there, then the name and form would shape. According to the volition, it works.
And it's not only that, from so many previous births, so you can...
So that is actually factored in the volition itself.
Mm-hmm.
The Buddha put into the karma, so it's volition. So, how
yeah,
the volition...
It's a big thing.
It's a big thing made of, you know, whatever it is. It is not a sort of a packet.
Mm-hmm.
It is a constructed packet. Mm-hmm. On the fly constructed packet. Because of this, you know, the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we analyzed this one in greater details, going through that there is this form, edible food. And then there is this contact, right, regarding the same food. So there is feeling that come to arise. And then I pursue that feeling. Having pursued that feeling, whether it's a pleasure or displeasure, then I get the volition, chetana. Because of the volition, there is volitional formation or sanskara. Because by that time I regard that one as mine. When I regard that one as mine, it becomes this volitional formation. And the volitional formation construct all the other things. Feel, consciousness, as well as all the other factors. So since it is constructing in that way, and then I get the views quickly, and this is mine and all those things, and then I go back to the same thing again. So it's a very rapidly this loop continues. So the person can't even think whether this is, you know, one stopped, the other one comes, or not. He can't determine. It is just the same copy happening very rapidly.
Yeah, but the mind-making thing happens when you were in different formations, you know, in different forms, like when you are an animal also, that's a different mind-making, isn't it? When you are somebody else in the hell or somewhere, there's different mind-making.
But it's the same dependent origination. Is the same dependent origination for everybody. But the cause can be different. You know, for example, when I see a flower, I might react to it I like it. Another person will react to it. I don't like it. Right? So there's this cause, hetu. It's a different. But the dependent origination, these conditions, is universal for anybody, anywhere. That's how it occurs. No matter what form you have. So it's continuous.
Well, the last question I have, now we are talking about in this particular part, the establishment of consciousness and then the
name
and form.
Yeah.
And all those two happens together or separate instances?
Well, it is, they are at once together because any consciousness has got those conditions,
yeah.
Like a universal past, like this contact should be there, feeling should be there, perception, volition, they are there. So Buddha is really, you know, the remarkable in that one. Buddha can actually say from this, at this moment, this one is the most significant. Out of those mental content or the consciousness, this mental content, this one is craving is significant. This time feeling is significant, right? And it does not mean that the consciousness is not there. Whenever feeling is there, there is consciousness. It's not apart from that one. And then there is construction. It's like that I'm going to a certain place. And then I can go in this path, I can go in that path. Which path I do? So my volition decide, you know, where I go. Depending on the thing. So it is something inside. But if you take two conscious movements, now you can relate the volition over here was the one actually create the problem over here. Consciousness here is the one create the volition over here. So because it's looping.
So I did really get now in for example, if in the mother's womb, if what is called Gandhava came and then it, that is the consciousness part.
Mm-hmm.
And now without that part, any sort of any movement in the mother's womb, there is a nama part.
No. Buddha said in the probably the previous, you know, the one couple of weeks before one, Buddha said that the Gandhava should be present. If he is not present, if it is got to be the mother's time, mother's season, and the Gandhava is present. So this one to occur, otherwise it won't. Got to be there. Apart from that one, there won't be.
Now there is the confusion comes from the certain things I probably heard from you that you were telling me at some stage there is instances that mind or the consciousness go out from mother's womb and later on comes back or something like that. Is that things happening?
Yeah, that's possible as
so,
well.
Because it is the
Gandhava who left.
Hmm.
Because that he is aware, he is there, right? So there is this establishment. It's like you have got a torch. You switch on the torch and you hold on to something, right? I switch on the torch, I can either look at the object or I can look at the other side. If I'm not looking at it, not holding it, well, if I can go.
Yeah, once the consciousness get in and if it tries to get out again, that means that there's a death occurred.
No.
Why
there,
not?
There are certain things that you can do. You can go and you can come back. You see that you are unconscious sometimes, right? And, but do you die? No, it doesn't.
But
it is that there is some
is there. At that time consciousness is there.
It doesn't have to be all the time with that thing. There should be some sort of protection. That protection is taken from some other way. Only the protection is needed at that time. So it doesn't mean that the person who came here establishing the mother's womb and that person is not even aware or anything like that. It's not so. That's why people, you know, if the mother is going to, let's say a good person came over here, a Buddhist person, and then the mother is going to party, the drinking alcohol and that one, that person trying to leave, doesn't want to stay there. I know some examples over here. And that person, same mother, is going to the temple, so happy. I'm happy to stay like that. Because they are aware. For the first 3 months, there is this big awareness depending on the person who came over there.
So, in every birth, that is the case? Or
I'm not saying every birth. Animal birth,
yeah.
Hell, they are different. Oh. The human birth, there is this distinction.
Oh.
Yes. So, you can see this, the merits giving at 7 days, 3 months has some relationship. That
and again, it is person has a merit, isn't it? Otherwise
does not. Buddha, the Bodhisattva, for example, right, establish that consciousness over there, stay knowingly, and get out of that one knowingly. So completely aware. So it is up to that level. Yes. And then Buddha said that this consciousness, with the, because of the name and form, the requisite condition comes consciousness. And this is the extent to which there is birth, aging, death, passing away and re-arising. This is the extent to which there are means of designation, expression and delineation. This is the extent to which the sphere of discernment extends, the knowing and all those things up to that level. So this, the cycle revolve in this. And then Buddha, this is the second part now we are going to discuss, delineation of a self, that is the nature of the self. And in other words, how they explain the nature of a self. If someone is explaining the nature of a self, then this is how they explain. To what extent, Ananda, does one delineate when delineating a self? Either delineation a self possessed of form and finite, one delineates that myself is possessed of form and finite. Or delineating a self possessed of form and infinite, one delineates that myself is possessed of form and infinite. Or delineating a self formless and finite, one delineates myself is formless and finite. Or delineating a self formless and infinite, one delineates that myself is formless and infinite.
What do you mean by delineate here?
Delineate means that is like this... The nature of the self, that how you explain the nature of the self. You know, let's say I see sort of a form, a food, or maybe a person, let's say. I'm looking at a person. So, if you are asked to describe that what you see, the person, and or the self, if someone asks what is self, then that such a person would say that, consider that the form, the self has a form. There is some sort of form because I can see in front of me there is a form. And when I see in front of a mirror, I can see a form. And then also he is thinking that it is finite. It's not sort of infinite, it's finite. Parittato, that's what he thinks. That because that he can see this person is, there is a form. And is dying, so it's sort of finite. Live for 80 years, 70 years, or what sort of thing. So that is the one description of the of a form. Then if I am describing a self, that's maybe the one way to describe it. And now the one when delineating a self, delineates it as possessed of form and finite. Either delineates it as possessed of form and finite in the present. At this moment it's like that one. Or of such a nature that it will naturally become possessed of form and finite. You know, in the future also like that one. In the future after death. Or he believes that although it is not yet that way, I will convert it into being that way. This being the case, it is proper to say that a fixed view of a self possessed of form and finite obsesses him. So he got a view that there is some sort of a form all the ways and it's a finite thing. The one who, when delineating a self, delineates it as possessed of form and infinite, that is infinite is ananto, either delineates it as possessed of form and infinite. So this for this person, that the self is not sort of thing that... dying over here. There is a finite form, but it's infinite. you know, this birth, the next birth, the next birth. So infinitely it is there. So always they assume there is something, a constant thing. It's plugged into this body, plugged into that body, and keep on plugging into whatever form.
Because of mama, that's
yes,
mama,
yes,
feeling,
yeah,
it?
Yeah. The one who, when delineating a self, delineated this as formless and finite. So maybe somebody meditating. So when they meditate, then you know, disgusted about the body, and then. Having discussed about the body, going to the, you know, higher realms and so on. And then so there is this perception that self is nothing to do with this form. So then he would say that it is formless. Because you can see, if I can see a formless sphere with the formless beings and the beings with form sphere, and you can see you might be biased toward the formless one. Having seen the value or sort of thing, and, because what is important here is to understand our consciousness hold into something. So when my consciousness hold into something, I designate accordingly. If it is a food, I designate it as food, right? If it is a form, human form, yeah, that's the self. So whatever it construct, I'm aware of something, looking that consciousness, that my torch.
Because is that because you are always, you want an existence?
Always I used to have the existence. So my existence always construct, it give rise to that one. Or, because of my existence, I got the eye and then I first perceive a form. So when I perceive a form, I can see the form. Right? So at that time, my consciousness become that self. That, you know, what I perceive. You know, by the time you are actually feeling something, what do you have? Do you have anything else? Let's say there is the pleasure, somehow. By the time you perceive pleasure, there is nothing else other than the pleasure that you think. Or aware of that one. See, where that torch is light up and holding and they have the attention, that's where it is. So, it could be formless. And either delineate it formless and infinite in the present, or such nature that it will become formless and finite, that is after death. That means, oh, I can see that I myself has got a form now, but the form I am thinking about is that in the future, I will have a body, you know, the formless thing, not a body and the, you know, existence with the formless. So I may be like that one in the future. And then they go into this, in some instance, they go into the, that it's permanent as well. That is the next one, you know, or he believes that although it is not yet that way, I will convert it into being the way. This being the case, it is proper to say that a fixed view of a self formless and finite obsesses him. The one who, when delineating a self, delineate it as a formless and infinite. Either delineate it as formless and infinite in the present, or of such a nature that it will naturally become formless and finite, infinite in the future, after death. Or he believes, although it is not yet that way, I will convert into being that way. This being the case, it is proper to say that a fixed view of self, formless and infinite, obsesses him. You see that the Alar Kalam, Uddha Kalam, you know, that they having reached that one, they thought that's the Nibbana. As well, so live forever in that state. So non-delineation of a self, to what extent Ananda does one not delineate when not delineating a self? Either not delineating a self possessed of form and finite, one does not delineate that myself possessed of form and finite, or not delineating a self possessed of form and infinite, one does not delineate that myself is possessed of form and infinite. Or not delineating a self, formless and finite, one does not delineate that myself is formless and finite. Or not delineating a self, formless and infinite, one does not delineate that myself is formless and infinite. Now the one who, when not delineating a self, does not delineate it as possessed of form and finite, does not delineate it as possessed of form and finite in the present. So all three time points it is applied. The present, and the future as well as the after death. So that I will not become like that. So it's applied all the time. So it's the other way round what we just discussed. The one who, when not delineating a self, does not delineate it as possessed of form and infinite. So we have the combinations, the form and infinite, and the form and the finite, and the other case is formless and finite, formless and infinite, four cases. So that person is not regarding that particular fixed view in those four instances. When one is regarding these things as, you know, that I self is this form, and then the finite, you know, or the infiniteness, he got a fixed view. Now, in this particular case, if one is does not regarding any of these things, then this fixed view does not obsess him. So this is the problem that one has got. When there is a form, always one would normally think that self exists. Where is here? The body, right? Without knowing the arising, how it come to arise, how it passes away, the dependent origination not seen, one would always obsess with these views. That view I am. And so, assumption of a self, in what ways do people regard the self? This is interesting. To what extent, Ananda, does one assume when assuming a self, assuming feeling to be the self? One assumes that feeling is myself, or feeling is not myself. Myself is oblivious to feeling, that is, he is impercipient of feeling. Neither is feeling myself, nor is myself oblivious to feeling, but rather myself feels, in that myself is subject to feeling. So when now one who says feeling is myself should be addressed as follows. There are these three feelings, my friend: feelings of pleasure, feelings of pain, and feeling of neither pleasure nor pain. Which of these three feelings do you assume to be the self out of the feeling? Well, this is actually happening in the mind. Whenever you feel, at that time you exist. Exist with that feeling. The self exists. And Buddha is asking, if you consider this one, which of these three feelings do you assume to be the self? At a moment when a feeling of pleasure is sensed, no feeling of pain, or neither pleasure nor pain is sensed. It's disjoint. You can have either pleasure, but you can't have the displeasure at the same time. Only a feeling of pleasure is sensed at that moment. At a moment when a feeling of pain is sensed, no feeling of pleasure, or neither pleasure nor pain is sensed. Only a feeling of pain is sensed at that moment. At a moment when a feeling is neither pleasure nor pain is sensed, no feeling of pleasure or pain is sensed. Only a feeling of neither pleasure nor pain is sensed at the moment. So they are mutually exclusive. You get only one at that time. So if I say that myself is a feeling, feeling is myself, so there is this pleasure, displeasure, which one you are. So if you say pleasure, and then the pleasure ceases, then myself disappears. So
it goes with the displeasure. The next moment it could be the displeasure, then the neither pleasure or displeasure.
Yes. So you get one of them. So if you say that myself is the feeling, feeling is myself, then you disappear. Because you can't regard feeling as the self because of the change. So you see the impermanent thing actually saying that your self is broken now. If the pleasure is the only one remaining all the time, and I am perceiving the pleasure all the time, then I would say that I am permanent and stable, and myself is that one. But because of this is dependently arising, and it is changing, so Buddha says, now a feeling of pleasure is inconstant, that is impermanent, fabricated, conditioned, dependent on condition, dependently arising. Because remember previous discussion is because of the contact there this feeling come to be. If there is no contact, there won't be any feeling. Subject to passing away, dissolution, fading and cessation. A feeling of pain is impermanent, fabricated, dependent on condition, subject to passing away, dissolution, fading and cessation. A feeling of neither pleasure nor pain is impermanent, fabricated, dependent on conditions, subject to passing away, dissolution, fading and cessation. Nibbidaya, viragaya, nirodhaya, that's the verse over there. Having sense of feeling of pleasure as myself, then with the cessation of one very own feeling of pleasure, myself has perished. Having sense of feeling of pain as myself, then with the cessation of one's own very own feeling of pain, myself has perished. Having sense of feeling of neither pleasure nor pain as myself, then with the cessation of one's very own feeling of neither pleasure nor pain, myself has perished. It doesn't establish on the feeling. Thus he assumes, assuming in the immediate present, a self inconstant, entangled in pleasure and pain, subject to arising and passing away. He who says feeling is myself, thus in this manner, Ananda, one does not see fit to assume feeling to be the self. It does not fit to regard that feeling as self. As for a person who says feeling is not the self, myself is oblivious to feeling, that I am impercipient of feeling, he should be addressed as follows: my friend, when nothing whatsoever is sense, experience at all, would there be the thought I am? If I am not having any, if I am not perceiving any feeling, would there be any thought that I am? So then you can't even talk about self at that point. No, Lord. Thus in the manner, Ananda, one does not see fit to assume that feeling is not myself. Myself is oblivious to feeling. As for the person who says, neither is feeling myself, nor is myself oblivious to feeling, but rather myself feels, in that myself is subject to feeling, he should be addressed as follows: my friend, should feeling altogether and everywhere stop without remainder, then with feeling completely not existing owing to the cessation of feeling, would there be the thought I am? So that, for example, cessation of feeling and perception, Nirodha Samapatti, if someone is attending that one, then there won't be thought I am. If I say this, I myself feel, right? It's a very subtle point over here. If I say myself feels, but you know, I am not saying myself feeling is neither. I'm not saying feeling is myself, and I'm not saying it is. I'm not percipient of feeling either. But I myself feels. But if the feeling stopped, then that perception is all gone. Then my self does not exist. No, Lord. Thus, in this manner, Ananda, one does not see fit to assume that neither is feeling myself, nor is myself oblivious to feeling, but rather myself feels, in that myself is subject to feeling. Now, Ananda, in as far as the monk does not assume feeling to be the self, nor the self as oblivious, nor that myself feels, in that myself is subject to feeling, then not assuming in this way, he is not sustained by anything. This is the nachakinchi loke upadhyati. He is not clinging to anything. In the world, unsustained, he is not agitated. Unagitated, he is totally unbound, right with him. He discerns that birth is ended. You see that if there is birth, only if there is birth, then there will be aging and death. If there is no birth, would I get agitated? Because when there is birth, I have the aging and death, so therefore I get agitated, you know, upset about it. But if there is no birth, there won't be aging and death. So if you are not clinging to this birth and the next birth and births to come and not holding to anything, that means it doesn't matter whatever thing happens. So he's not becoming agitated and not agitating. He is totally unbound right with him. He discerns the birth is ended, so he attained Nibbana at that point. There is nothing further for this world. If anyone were to say with regard to a monk whose mind is thus released that the Tathagata exists after death, is his view, that would be mistaken. The Tathagata does not exist after death. The Tathagata both exists and does not exist after death. The Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist after death. Is his view, that would be mistaken. Why? Having directly known the extent of designation and the extent of objects of designation, the extent of expression and the extent of object of expression, the extent of description of the extent of the object of description, the extent of the discernment and the description of extent of the object of discernment to extent to which the cycle revolves, having directly known that this monkey is released. The monkey, monk released, having directly known that does not see, does not know his opinion. That would be mistaken. You see, the Tathagata exists after birth, and Tathagata, you know, does not exist, all those things. It is something to do with this, not knowing the dependent origination. Because the whole thing is dependently arising. And when the dependent origination ceases, get out of it, it's not there. Buddha said in another discourse, for the most part, for beings, it is either exist or does not exist. So if someone says, I do exist, right, I talk about the existence, I exist, then if you know about the passing away phenomena, then the existence does not, is not right. Because there is an argument against that one, because that person passing away, so the existence cannot be justified. If someone on the other hand says that the other way round, that is this the cessation, but there is this origin, arising phenomena, like this divorce of the clinging and all those things, so that one is not justified. Rather, there is just a rising and passing away phenomena. That's what happening. That is the dependent origination is the one continuing all the time. So there is this existence, non-existence has to be understood in that way. So there are seven stations of consciousness. Ananda, there are these seven stations of consciousness and two spheres. Which seven? So remember, Buddha was talking about consciousness before and the establishing in the mother's womb and so on, right? And now where would that be established? You know, whatever way the consciousness got to establish somewhere. Unless it has ceased completely without, not having any further craving to continue on. Ananda, there are these seven stations of consciousness and two spheres. Which seven? There are beings with diversity of body and diversity of perceptions, such as human beings, some devas, and some beings in the lower realm. This is the first station of consciousness. So, we can see the human beings have got this nanatta kaya, nanatta sanya. The body is different. And then the perception is different. Various people, various perceptions. And the second station is that there are beings with diversity of body and singularity of perception, such as the devas of the Brahma host generated by the first jhana. And there's a mistake in that thing that, and some beings in the four realm of deprivation, it is not there. It shouldn't be there, it has to cut down. I don't know how, it's translation error. So in this case that the body is different, and then but the perception is same. So they are the first jhana realm, divine beings are of that nature.
And the previous one has got to do with the animal,
everything, and
hell and everywhere.
Yeah, there are beings with the singularity of body and diversity of perception, such as the radiant deva, that is this Abhasara deva. This is the third station of consciousness. That is, this, their body is the same, but the perception is different. And there are beings with singularity of body and singularity of perception, such as the beautiful, lustrous devas in the fourth station of consciousness. They are this Subhakinna deva in the third jhana realm. So they have the same body and the same perception as a singular perception. There are beings who with complete transcending of perception of physical form, with the disappearance of perception of resistance and not heeding perception of diversity, perceiving infinite space, arrive at the dimension of infinitude of space. This is the fifth station of consciousness. So you can see over here that let's say one is perceiving forms, and for example that this material things, earth, element of extension, and the element of cohesion, element of motion, and element of heat. So if I got rid of all those four elements and whatever thing derived out of those things, then I don't get anything material. So I can go beyond those material things that I regard, all those things, they are not mine. Material things. For example, I see something outside, excrement, urine and all those things, not mine. The hair on the floor is not mine. Hair over here is not mine and so on. So I disregard that. Disregard means I don't pay any attention to it. So if I'm not paying any attention to those things regarding these elements, then I completely remove my mind from whatever thing hard in the world, whatever thing soft in the world, the liquid things and so on. So if you think about it, you can see that you go out of the material world. And the other example is that the two people going into the top of the mountain and leaving one over here. So you can see that let's say two people go to the bottom of a mountain, one is climbing, the other one staying here. And when you go up in the hill, you can see this person become very small. And whatever features, signs and all those things that he got is no longer attractive, no longer impinge in the mind. So then you lose the significance of this object over here. The name and form, that what we discussed little while ago, the contact is sort of now, you know, diluting. And so over there, even if you change this person and put another person, there won't be any difference. Now imagine you go far away from this earth to a moon or the sun or the far away to a star and looking at this earth. And you can see that the earth is very tiny at that time. There is nothing significant over here. So the houses over here, very small. And the people, non-significant. You don't have any attention to these things. Like that. So you can see that if you develop the ability to be like that one, you know, looking at these things far away, far distance. But if you're thinking about, you know, I miss my meal or something like that one, that's different. But if you can make it happen, then leaving out this thing, then you can see what you get if the space is infinite level of the consciousness. And this is the fifth station of consciousness. There are beings who with complete transcending of the dimension of the infinitude of first space, perceiving infinite consciousness, arrive at the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness. This is the sixth station of consciousness. So here you can see one would be perceiving that this first one is actually perceiving the space is infinite. So how do you perceive the space is infinite? You perceive it from your consciousness, right? So I perceive this carpet, you know, extending from that end to this end. So that means my mind runs through the carpet from that to this. So if I'm running my mind from the space, from one to another, so as far as I'm running that it is space is infinite, I am aware of that situation, that space is infinite from my consciousness. Now you can actually have the object as the consciousness itself in that case, that I don't need the space to have the perception as the consciousness, this one is infinite. So you lose that space is infinite thing from your mind, and then you have the consciousness is infinite maintained without the aid of space. If you have attention to the space, then you are fallen from that level and you live with that space level. If you have attention to any material things in the world, then you fall from that one and fallen back to the this world of materiality. So it's very simple thing, hard to do if you don't have the practice. But the theory is right to go in. So that's the sixth station of consciousness. And there are beings who, with the complete transcending of the dimension of infinitude of consciousness, perceiving, there is nothing, arrive at the dimension of nothingness. This is the seventh station of consciousness. So here you see that the person who was perceiving that consciousness is infinite, at that time he understands, what do I know from this consciousness? From this consciousness I know only the feeling. The feeling pleasure, displeasure, neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable. So he is actually normal in equanimity level, but it's a feeling. So he understands, if he knows about the dependent origination, for example, he would understand this one is dependently arising. The feeling is dependently arising. Like that, if you have two wood stick, rub them together, then the heat comes to arise. And if you take it apart, heat ceases. Like that one, this feeling that has arisen depending on the contact ceases, and then the feeling ceases. So having understood that one, he going out of that, the feeling, the significance of the feeling is not no longer existing in him. Right? Like that, remember that material thing, if you don't hold of that one, then you can go to the space is infinite level. And if you can maintain this infiniteness without the aid of the space, you can maintain the consciousness is infinite. So equanimity is remain infinitely over there. Now, if you remove that ingredient, that the feeling ingredient, then one can go into the neither so perception is infinite level. The plane of nothing. That means I am not perceiving this feeling. It's like that in Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha said there are six elements. The element of extension, element of heat, element of cohesion, and element of motion. And then the space is infinite, consciousness is infinite. So if you get rid of all those six, what is left? You left with nothing, no thing. So now he perceives there is nothing whatsoever. Isn't that a perception? So that perception is there. And then he thinks that I don't want this perception either. So then he reached the next level, neither perception nor non-perception, because I don't want the perception as well. So now...
When these things, because this is not, I don't know whether it's the proper word to use, realize that the when you go to the from one to the other one, that realize is that one also that what we call that real realization?
No, they are not realizations, not yet. These are the stages one can go.
But still it is with the understanding, so you go from one to the other.
Well, the understanding could be different. Understanding is that I am disgusted about this body. I don't want to anything to do with this body. Therefore, I attain the space is infinite. Because I am not paying any attention to this one. Because I see the value of the other one. Like that...
What do you say then? Then that person, when he goes to from feeling to the other one, so then...
There are three ways. I was explaining only one way. One way is that understanding. That is the sunyamidam attanivattani, you know, that there's nothing pertaining to self. You know, this is not myself and there's nothing pertaining to myself. That's the third one. The other one is that you be there for a long time. That you maintain that the consciousness is infinite for a long time. What do you get? You get bored.
But that's not realized that this is...
Not realized. And then I go into the next one. Yeah. Because that I'm skilled in attaining... maintaining it, and then I get bored. Like the jhana, first jhana is also like that one. Why you go to the second one? You are fed up with this initial application and sustained application. I have to keep on doing this one. Why would I do that one? And then you go into the next one. And then there is rapture, so the second jhana level. And you get fed up with the rapture. Why would I have this rapture and it's flowing from my body and, you know, trouble for me? And then you move to the third one. So it's just, you got to get fed up with this, whatever the existing state, to go to the next one. Oh, you got to have the understanding, oh, this is not for me. That's another way. So these are the seven stations, and then there is this neither perception, non-perception, and the non-percipient being, that is this, those are mentioned as two spheres. So seven stations as two spheres. Now, as for the first station of consciousness, being with diversity of body and diversity of perception, such as human beings, some devas and some beings in the lower realm, if one discerns that station of consciousness, discerns its origination, discerns its passing away, discerns its allure, discerns of its drawback, discerns the escape from it, Would it be proper by means of that discernment to take delight there? So this is samudaya, astangame, asada, adinava, nissara. Those are the five regarding this these things. So Buddha is asking, is it if you know that if something come to arise by this means and it sort of passes away by this means, and Buddha is asking, is it you know, would it be proper? What in order, you know, to regard these things and clinging to these? No, Lord. So similarly, Buddha repeated that one to all the other ones. And Ananda, when knowing as they actually are, the origination passing away, allure, drawbacks, and escape from these seven stations of consciousness, and two spheres, a monk is released through lack of clinging. He is said to be a monk released through discernment from the wisdom. If we understand these five, then he becomes released by the wisdom, panya vimukti, if you understand these things. So he knows these are the seven stations of consciousness and these are the two spheres. Wherever you go, well, there is this passing away and death. So whether it is they are being born in the neither perception nor non-perception realm, for example, they live for 84,000 eons. That means this world sort of get destroyed and reconstructed after a long time. It happens 84,000 times that he is still living. But that person being born over there, after passing away, most of them being born in hell, animal realm, and plane of departure. So it is that bad. So why would I construct something like that if someone knows about it? So having understood, one would be released from the wisdom. So eight emancipations, Ananda, there are these eight emancipations. What eight? Possessed of form, one sees forms. This is the first emancipation. That is, rupi rupani passati. I am patamo vimokko. What is that means? That means that you have, let's say, developed, let's say, for example, a cousin, the blue cousin or something, right? So having developed that for a long time, and when you see a form, I should be able to, let's say I see a yellow color something, I will make the whole universe yellow from my mind, because I can acquire that object with the kasina that I develop, I can make completely yellow. So if you have a flower, for example, one yellow flower, you would normally value that one and attach to it, right? But if you can actually have acres and acres of yellow, just yellow, that one flower would be significant. So you don't have any value for that, right? If you're thinking intelligently. Since a person that you in front of you, that you see from your eye, you see something and you value that part, that thing, that color, it becomes sort of a big thing. But if you can make the whole thing like the yellowish everywhere, then this yellow what you see in front of you is no value. Do you see what I am saying? So, Buddha said in another discourse, so you develop these things and then you make it vast everywhere and then you think I can get rid of that. You know, I can go beyond that. This is a nice technique. You know, always we value something because it's very little we get.
Yeah, because of the scarcity.
That's right.
Yeah.
But if you can make it, you know, billions and billions and billions and all sort of thing, even if you have money, billions and billions, right? I'm not a craving person I'm talking about. So $1 is non-significant. Like that. That you can actually exceed that thing, that whatever the color is. So that is that one. So having developed that perception, one can actually get rid of, and a singular word is medalia hakke, you know, having developed that. Not percipient of form internally, one sees form externally. This is the second emancipation. Ajjattam arupa sanyi bahinda arupani passati. So you don't even have, this person actually has developed into a greater extent. I don't have the internal perception. I can just apply this on outside. Straight away. So I can actually get rid of that thing. So that's the second one. One is intent only on the beautiful. This is the third emancipation. That third emancipation is that if you have loving kindness, for example, you made it vast the first quarter of the time, night time, the second quarter, third quarter, loving kindness, compassion, and the appreciative joy and the equanimity, right? So those things you maintain for a long time, and then you abide this one is beautiful, appamana cheto vimukti, over here, you know, with the loving kindness. That is the third one. And then the fourth one, with the complete transcending of perception of form, with the disappearance of the perception of resistance, and not heeding perception of diversity, perceiving infinite space, one enters and remains in the dimension of infinite two of space. This is the fourth emancipation. So we discussed that one little while ago, about the, remember the, regarding this element of extension, element of heat, and so on, and going out of that one. One go into the space is infinite level, and then the next one is the fifth one is the consciousness is infinite one, and then next one is this the fourth one is the space is infinite, fifth one is the consciousness is infinite, and the sixth one is the plane of nothing. There is nothing. So the seventh jhana. And then eighth one is the complete transcending of dimension of nothing. One enters and remains in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. This is the seventh emancipation. With the complete transcending of the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, one enters and remaining in the cessation of feeling and perception. Nirodha samapatti. So that is the eighth one. Now, when a monk attains these eight emancipations in forward order, in reverse order, in forward and reverse order, when he attains them and emerges from them wherever he wants, however he wants, and for long as he wants, when through the ending of mental fermentations, he enters and remains in the fermentation-free awareness, release, that is the Cheto Vimukti, and discernment release, that's the Panya Vimukti. Having directly known it and realized it in here and now, he is said to be a monk releasing both ways. And as for another release in both ways, higher or more sublime than this, there is none. So if someone is released from both ways, Prajñāvimukti and Cetovimukti. So see the Cetovimukti one, Buddha says that these ones, you know, Rupa, Rupa, Anipasati, that thing, and goes into the eighth one, cessation of that one, and then backward order as well. So skillful, can go into that one, and wherever he wants to get out, he can get out. It's not easy to get out of these things, you know, when you go there as well. There is this thing, because that it is so good, you feel like staying. Sometimes you need some effort to that one. So this Buddha is saying that if you are skillful in getting out and getting in, right? And if you can go in this order, forward order, backward order, you know, whatever the order, then he is released from this one. So you can see the Cheto Vimukti is that difficult. It's not simple. It is that difficult to have these skills, right? And, but the Prajna Vimukti is sort of by hearing Dhamma and learning and thinking about it, one can achieve, you know, the other ones can be achieved, but those with those characteristics, having done it this before and so many, you know, years and so on, so and so, have time for doing that one, then that's possible.
Is that vimukti mean it's attained? That vimukti, cheto vimukti, yeah, means attained.
Yeah. No, cheto vimukti is, yeah, you first get the liberation. When you liberate, yeah, you get the liberation. And when you get the liberation, then there comes the knowledge for the destruction of these things. Because when you are bound by something, one cannot think properly. If you have a food in front of you, you know, if your mind is going to the food, then you are bound by that food. Then if you are not bound by that food, whether in front of you or anywhere else, then you can think. So these sensual desires and sort of thing is the one that preventing these things going into these liberations. So it's a great discourse. It's very deep. The latter part you can see the deeper than the first one. If you understand the first one to a greater extent, then you can get the glimpse of what is meant by the latter part.
The last eight is the one that describes Tathagata Mahansa's...
Anuttaro Purusa Dhamma Sarathi means that. That's what it is. So when you recollect the Buddha, you need to recollect these eight. If you are recollecting correctly. So, and the Buddha is sending us to these eight directions. That's what this Anuttara Purusa Dhamma Sarathi means, sending to, to train us, sending to these directions. So, at least one should take at least one direction, at least, so that one can make some sort of a progress. Or else, one has to have the prajna vimutti, that is wisdom. In order to arrive at that one, you need to exceed this materialistic thing. Otherwise, it won't be coming over there. So at least fourth jhana should be there to sort of have it. So along the way, you will get other ones like a stream entry and one's return and sort of thing. But to have the final release, you got to have one of these, some way or the other. Okay, I think we will stop for today.